And welcome, everyone. This is JJ Virgin, and I'm here with an amazing guest today. This is actually my hero I'm here with today, Dr. Kayla Daniels. And if you've heard me speak much, you've, I'm sure, heard me mention her name or some of her quotes, like "There is no joy in soy," and referring to her book, The Whole Soy Story. And I will tell you, Kayla, that something that happens to me all the time, because I will always throw out a little barb about soy, and it sparks, as I'm sure you know, so much controversy because there's so much crazy information out there. So I'm going to give Dr. Kayla Daniels her introduction so you'll understand why you should listen to what this woman has to say, because she really, really knows her stuff. And one of the challenges we have out there in the world of nutrition and wellness and health and fitness is there's a whole lot of stuff that is not backed up by science. It's just backed up by cash. So not so over here with Dr. Daniels. She is the real deal. She's got her PhD in nutritional sciences and anti-aging therapies from the Union Institute and University of Cincinnati. She's board certified as a clinical nutritionist. She is a member of the board of directors of the Weston A. Price Foundation. By the way, that's a really cool foundation. If you don't know about it, you should check that one out. Her world is specializing in digestive disorders and women's health issues, infertility, and recovery. Okay, and I want to underline this. I think this is so cool, Kayla. It's recovery from vegetarian and soy-based diets, because you're going to find out today, I know, laugh, of what these things can really do to you. And it's still, you know, we spend every week still dealing with people who are misled into thinking this is the way you need to be for health. Like, you have to suffer and eat this stuff for health. And I don't know in what world that a, you know, soy ice cream could be considered healthy. Anyway, so her book, The Whole Soy Story, The Dark Side of America's Favorite Health Food, you have to have that book. This is like a must for any library. It is so amazing. And don't take my word for that. It's like all of the hottest, biggest names in integrated health. I refuse to call it alternative health because, I'm sorry, drugs should be the alternative, let's face it. But Doris Rapp, who I love. I love Dr. Rapp. I had a fun evening with her once out in Arizona. Dr. Jonathan Wright, Dr. Mercola, another pal of mine who I just adore, Dr. Blaylock. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And I was lucky to hear an interview from her by her a couple years ago, and I've just been your raving fan ever since. She's been all over the news, all over the media. But, you know, this message just needs to be continued to get heard and heard and heard, because even though she's been out there a ton, I'm still amazed at how few people really know about that. So that's why we want you here today. I'm going to do my part to help spread your message, too. So welcome, Kayla.
Thank you so much. It's such an honor to be talking with you, JJ.
Well, thank you, and I feel the same way. I'm like, you are seriously my hero, and you're fighting the good fight, and we need more people out there like you. So I want to jump right in with the biggie, the big kahuna question. Now, honestly, with all of the hype, and I'm going to say misinformation out there, but all of that stuff, like let's say we go to Expo West, which Expo West is this big health food expo each year, it's just like a temple of soy out there. I mean, how can you say when we walk into the health food stores and soy is the predominant food there, how can you say that soy is not a health food?
There are thousands of studies that date back 100 years that link soy to malnutrition, digestive problems, thyroid dysfunction, cognitive decline, reproductive disorders, including infertility and loss of libido, immune system breakdown, even heart disease and cancer. And so many people are not aware of these studies because the soy industry has been absolutely brilliant in their marketing of soy as something that's good for you, something that even if you don't like is a health food, a miracle food that can cure everything.
It drives me nuts. And you say there's thousands of studies. I guess they're what we call those studies that get ignored out there, huh?
Right. Whenever there's a study that the soy industry doesn't like, they first ignore it, hoping it'll go away. And if that doesn't happen, they see it's either out of date if it's an old study and poorly designed if it's a new study. And then they promptly get to work designing some new, fast studies that will show the opposite.
Oh, now here's the one, and I know I get asked this a lot, is this whole idea of Asians eating lots of soy and having lower cancer rates. Is it true that soy can cause cancer? What's the deal there, especially with breast cancer?
That is a big question. First of all, Asians don't eat a lot of soy, but the soy industry is marketing that as one of their key concepts. In fact, right now they're marketing the idea of soy to the Asians, saying it's their historical, it's their heritage, and the American soy industry is setting up these great big soy processing plants in China and other places to get all that good soy to the Asians. Now, you'd think if they were eating that much already, they wouldn't need that, right? But they're doing that.
I lived in Japan, and that's why I know this is a bunch of BS, because I lived in Japan, and there were two places only that I ever got soy. It was either a little bit in miso, you know, miso soup, right? There would be edamame at the bar. And there would be, there's the third one was what we call poor man's sushi, inari sushi, but it was not a mainstay. It was sort of a condiment.
Condiment is right. The soy industry would like us to think that soy is a staple food in Asia. And, of course, Asia is a huge continent with many different dietary customs and lifestyles, but wherever you go, the soy is eaten traditionally as a condiment and not as a staple food. And they're also traditionally eating old-fashioned types of soy foods, which are whole soy foods and not as bad for us, and also in small quantities. Now, in Japan, that is one of the countries where they consume more soy than many other parts of Asia, but the places they consume the most soy would be the Zen monasteries, and the reason they're doing it there is because it helps the monks maintain their vows of celibacy.
Yeah, I was training a bunch of athletes who were all working to become the next pro heavyweight boxers of the world, and someone had gotten them onto soy milk. And I'm thinking, man, that's the last thing we need going on here is you guys taking a lot of soy milk. I told them that story. I don't know. This is probably an old wives' tale, right, that the Japanese women, if they catch their men cheating, feed them a bunch of soy.
Yes, I like to say that the households in Japan where they eat the most soy is where the husband's been cheating.
But what does it, so it really does dampen their libido, huh?
Well, it either dampens their libido or dampens their ability. So either way, the wife triumphs.
Well, there's a little pearl, a clinical pearl, should you need that one out there, ladies. Now, what about, you know, you said eating a little bit of soy is fine. So give us some guidelines there, especially because I know that soy has been a genetically modified crop. What's the deal with that versus, say, organic soy? What are recommendations for soy? I know it's kind of a broad question, but
yes, and I do want to get back to that question about cancer in Asia, too.
Okay.
In terms of the type of soy, the kind that is eaten traditionally in Asia in small quantities is usually not a problem for people who are not allergic to soy. And more people are allergic to soy. Soy is now one of the top 8 allergies, and it may soon go into the top 4. But if you're not one of those people, it's usually completely safe to have miso soup, a little tempeh, even a little tofu once in a while at a vegetarian potluck. And that's
not once in a while. Is that like once a week, once a month?
Yeah, say once a week if you don't have any problems that soy could worsen, such as thyroid problems, reproductive problems. A little soy here and there is not a problem for most of us, and that's a good thing because it's really hard to avoid because it's in so many foods, particularly food products, anything packaged, processed, or fast, it's got soy in it. We can pretty much count on that.
Mm-hmm. Now, go back then to, because I know one of the big things they talk about is that, you know, the Asians have lower risks of heart disease and cancer because they eat soy. So what's the real deal there?
The real deal is that Asians do have lower rates of breast cancer, prostate cancer, and colon cancer, but they have higher rates of liver, esophageal, stomach, a couple other kinds of cancers, thyroid cancer, more thyroid cancer there. So if you're going to credit soy for helping the Asians in terms of preventing breast cancer, then we have to blame soy for creating higher levels of some of these other cancers. And my feeling is the Asians aren't eating that much soy to begin with, and there's probably a whole lot of dietary and lifestyle factors involved there. But, of course, every October it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and the soy industry is right in there with the Komen races for the cure, and they're handing out little pink boxes of VitaSoy soy milk and other soy products, and very busily promoting the idea that soy is the ticket to breast cancer prevention. And that is so sad, because the reality is we have a whole lot of studies that support the idea that soy can contribute to, cause, and accelerate the growth of breast cancer, at least in some women.
Yeah, I guess what kind of hormone receptor positive breast cancer you have would determine that. Hmm?
Yeah, and because of that, the French Food Agency and the Israeli Health Ministry and the German Institute for Risk Assessment have all warned women who've been diagnosed with breast cancer or have a family history of breast cancer to be cautious about soy consumption. And here in the U.S., the Cornell University Center for Breast Cancer and Environmental Risk Factors has also warned about the possibility of soy increasing the risk of breast cancer.
It is just amazing, but it does seem like the other countries are way ahead of the game here in identifying both with things like mercury and with soy and with genetically modified foods, getting on the bandwagon, getting these things out of our health. So what else, because I know here I've got a question about Israeli Health Ministry and the French Food Agency and German Institute of Risk Assessment, that they've been watching soy and making some decisions and guidelines. What's going on there?
With the Israelis, it has a great deal to do with fertility issues. The Israelis really take that biblical injunction about being fruitful and multiplying. They take that very seriously. And a few years back, there were some deaths from soy infant formula, and in that case, it was a manufacturing problem that led to the deaths, but because of that situation, they decided to investigate the soy issue in general, and they put together a big committee of very qualified people, everything from pediatricians to oncologists to researchers, and they determined that there were, in fact, some risks from soy, and their biggest concern is with growing children. So regarding soy infant formula, they have said that we should not use soy infant formula except as a last resort. With children, they've said no more than 3 times a week and no more than once a day up to age 18. And with adults, they have said exercise caution because of adverse effects on fertility, particularly male fertility is what the Israelis were looking at, and increased breast cancer risk.
Well, let's talk more about the whole soy and kids, and especially the soy infant formula. It just makes me crazy when I see parents buying that. It's the only time I tend to be really, like, keep my mouth shut, you know, especially at the grocery store, but I have done interventions when I see people buying soy infant formula. What's the deal with that?
The deal with that is that soy infant formula contains plant estrogens, and that's because they are naturally in the soybean and processing methods don't get them out. That's the bottom line there. And so these plant estrogens are not the same as real human estrogens, but they're close enough so that they can bollocks up the works. They can interfere with hormone production, and they can interfere with hormone utilization in the body. Now, one might ask, what does that have to do with little babies? Well, it turns out these little babies, both boys and girls, they're manufacturing all sorts of hormones, and they're at that tender age, they're being programmed to go through puberty properly and for the boys to become men and the girls to become women. And when plant estrogens are getting into the picture, development may not be normal. And for boys, that can mean arrested puberty or delayed puberty. For girls, it can often mean premature puberty. And we have an epidemic of premature puberty among girls now, and that is well documented. I would never say soy is the only cause of that, because there's many environmental estrogens, plastics, pesticides, and so forth. But soy is certainly part of that whole picture.
Wow. Now, what about, is there any link with it and ADD?
Absolutely, particularly with babies who've been on soy formula during the first 6 months of their lives. They are quite likely to be toxic in terms of manganese. And the good news with that is we can actually get it out. And in fact, when I work with clients helping them with recovering from soy, I will test them and often find that there are high levels of manganese and often high levels of copper.
And so are you doing, how are you testing them?
I use hair mineral analysis,
okay,
which I find a very good method, provided the tests are read properly and we use them for monitoring.
Mm-hmm. And then what do you do? Find someone that's got this, because that was my biggest concern. I'm sure there are mothers on the line that thought they were doing the right thing, and they just are sick thinking now of what is going on with their kids. So
the mothers who contact
me,
they're so heartbroken. They feel so guilty, and I say, don't feel guilty. It's not your fault. You know, it's been very hard to get this information. The health benefits of soy are being heavily advertised by a huge multi-billion-dollar industry, and it's just a few people like you and me, JJ, trying to get the truth out.
I know, who aren't regulated by those big companies.
Right.
Yeah, they can't stop us. See, this is why I love the Internet. Like, there's no stopping us. We will get the word out, and, you know, I've spent a lot of time now really learning Internet marketing, so these messages are getting out there, and we're going to save kids, because, again, I mean, I can go do an intervention at a grocery store, but, you know, that's pretty time-consuming. Now, just overall, though, let's look back at soy, because I know, again, it's like, how much soy can you eat? Difference between organic soy and the other soy, so people really understand what they're getting when they do, if they were going to have a little miso soup or edamame. What's the difference there?
Yes, so many people say to me, well, aren't all the problems with soy, aren't they having to do with genetically modified soy? And then they tell me they eat only organic. And what I say to that is, if you're going to eat soy, please eat only organic, because genetic modification is a huge problem. It makes soy much, much worse. But in fact, we should be assiduously avoiding any GM foods, GM corn, GM wheat, GM soy, anything GM we must avoid for our own health and the planet's health. Now, in terms of organic soy, though, sadly, many of the problems with soy are natural in the soybean. And that includes the estrogens that we've been talking about, the plant estrogens, sometimes called the isoflavones. They're in the bean. They're in the protein. And normal processing methods do not get rid of those. And soybeans also contain a whole lot of other things that we call anti-nutrients, and that includes something that blocks mineral absorption, such as calcium and magnesium, something that makes it hard to digest protein. So all these people drinking soy shakes and stuff, those are very hard to digest. There are oligosaccharides that make soy quite a flatulence producer. There's all sorts of problems that are in the soybean.
So then, I love all the stuff with the FDA and saying that, you know, soy is great for heart disease. I mean, what's up with that? How can there be this claim out there that the FDA is approved?
Well, we have to remember, this is the same FDA that gave us Vioxx and aspartame and other things that are well known to be damaging to our health. And it's been a long time since the soy business was a bunch of hippies stirring up tofu in their little cottage. Soy is a huge billion-dollar industry, and the soy health claim came in 1999, and the petition came in from Protein Technologies International, which is now known by the name Solay, and it was big business. And the evidence at best for a soy heart health claim was mixed then. And at the moment, the FDA is actually considering retracting that claim because I was involved with Dr. Kilmer McCulley and some other fabulous scientists in petitioning the FDA to retract the heart health claim based on the fact that there's no good evidence that soy lowers cholesterol. It sometimes raises it, sometimes has no effect. Soy could raise homocysteine levels. There are a whole lot of problems with soy that would suggest it can not only cause heart disease in some cases, but that it can cause cancer and other health problems. But besides people like me and Kilmer McCulley trying to stop that dubious health claim, even the American Heart Association has come in and said soy is not a miracle food. It's just a food. It does not prevent heart disease. It does not lower cholesterol. So we actually have some support even from totally mainstream organizations like the AHA.
Well, that's huge. Now, I know the biggest place I hear about using soy is all of that hoopla about it being great for women going through menopause, that it can work as a type of hormone replacement therapy, that it can help with hot flashes, that it might be good for reducing the risk of osteoporosis. What's the story there? Is there any validity to that?
There's no validity to it. The studies are inconsistent and contradictory at best. And I do believe that some women may be helped in terms of hot flashes, but I don't think the risk is justified because women going through midlife are already at risk for thyroid problems, and thyroid problems are epidemic in this country. Some people feel 20 million people have thyroid problems, and that leads to many of the familiar symptoms of weight gain, fatigue, malaise, depression, etc. And we know that soy can cause thyroid problems. We have more than 70 years worth of studies supporting that. Sometimes hypothyroidism, that's what we see most often. Often autoimmune thyroid problems like Hashimoto's, and that is what supposedly has been a problem for Oprah. And Oprah has sung the praises of soy on many of her shows, and I can't help but think that some of her problems are because she's eaten a lot of soy, those soy shakes she loves with soy milk and blueberries and shake powder. And her case, unfortunately, is rather typical of many midlife women who think soy will be good for menopause.
That's so frustrating. Now I've got a new mission. Save Oprah. I'll tell you the place that I've seen it most personally, and I remember when I was on Dr. Phil, we had a vegetarian on there who was living on soy, and she was hypothyroid. Now, she was hypothyroid, or TSH was just below the cutoff. It was like 5.12 or something, right? The doctor wouldn't give her thyroid medication.
And that's a level that I would think is actually hypo.
God. It was totally hypo, and she had every single symptom of it. And, you know, all I could do, since I couldn't get her medicated, was start to drag her off the soy, which was like kicking and screaming.
Mm-hmm.
What a nightmare. But I've seen – this is where I see it. I see it so often with people with thyroid problems, and it's the first thing that I always check. First of all, with everyone, I eliminate soy, and I do a lot of food sensitivity testing, and I am seeing exactly what you said. I'm seeing a lot of people responding to soy because even when we pull it out of their diet, it's still in everything if they're eating processed foods, which is the second thing we yank. But, you know, I've seen so much hypothyroidism, I just got to believe there's a connection. What are you seeing there? Do you believe that, because you just said 20 million people have hypothyroidism, do you think that a big contributor is the soy?
I do. I think with your average American who's on the standard American diet, who might be somebody who's not consciously adding soy, there's probably many, many factors. And their diets, of course, are truly junk food diets. Now, there's another whole group of candidates for thyroid problems, and those are the health-conscious people who are eating a lot of soy because they think it's healthy. And those are the people who are drinking lots of soy milk and eating whole bags of edamame as if it's popcorn and eating soy burgers and energy bars, and they're just loading up on soy.
So sad. Doing and thinking they're doing the right thing, it just makes me so sad to see. And along those same lines, I mean, who's at the most risk there? Because I would assume the person coming in really healthy and deciding to do that, hopefully at some point they'll kind of become cognizant that this isn't helping them, but who would the people starting to do that would be at the most risk?
The lucky people notice that they're feeling poorly right away because then they can see cause and effect. But for so many people, they start going downhill long term, and then they start thinking, I'm not feeling so good, I should eat more soy, because they're not making the connection. And in terms of the people most at risk, of course, the children are most at risk because their brains and bodies are still developing. And autoimmune thyroid problems are definitely higher among children who were on soy formula. But in terms of adults, I would agree with the British Committee on Toxicity that one of the high-risk groups is vegetarians, particularly vegans. Vegans are using soy as both dairy and meat substitutes, and they consider soy their main food group in many cases. So they are a high-risk group, midlife women in general, because for a variety of reasons, we are all prone to hypothyroidism these days because of everything from the water supply to other environmental toxins. And if we add soy to the mix, people can deteriorate very quickly.
Now, I've got to ask you, because I'm sitting here listening to this tonight, and I realize I don't know the answer to this. How the heck did you get on this path and this mission?
I started seeing a lot of sick vegetarians at spiritual groups and other places. And while I was seeing this, I was reading newspaper headlines about the soy of cooking and the joy of soy and reading that it cures everything from cancer to ingrown toenails. And I'm looking around and I'm seeing people who are eating a lot of soy and, you know, they weren't looking too good to me. So that aroused my curiosity and I started investigating. And I think the first things I discovered was that in all of these different healing traditions around the world, whether you're talking Ayurvedic medicine or Chinese medicine or macrobiotic diets even, none of them were recommending a lot of soy. And with Ayurvedic medicine, they consider soy very hard to digest. With Chinese medicine, it's used in small quantities as a pharmaceutical that can be useful occasionally. With macrobiotics, they were not recommending soy milk and soy burgers and soy bars. They were recommending small amounts of tempeh and miso. And right across the board, I was just seeing that the real healers were not using soy, and that would include places like the Garrison Cancer Clinic. Soy has been on the don't eat list since the 1940s, and it remains there. So that aroused my curiosity further, and at that point I wanted to see the science behind it. And I thought it would take about 6 months to wrap up a nice little book, and 4 years later.
Yeah, and I'm sure you're still watching the research all the time, too, so it probably never ends.
It's coming out all the time because what happens, and this is totally consistent, is that a good study will come out saying, for example, that soy has been associated with cognitive decline and senility and atrophied brains, etc. So the soy industry gets busy real fast, and they hire some people to do studies, and they're always short-term studies, and they come up with the conclusion that, in fact, soy enhances brain health. And then using their enormous PR machine, the news about that is coming right out, and they keep the news coming all the time.
Wow. And so your book, when was the book finished?
The book was finished in the fall of 2004, and it came out in spring 2005.
And let's plug it a bit. I'll also put it into my e-zine, but easiest place to get it is on Amazon, I would assume?
That's a great place to get it, and you can get it at a good price, too.
Good. All righty. And now, couple things I'd love to hear. I'd love to hear how you work with a client. I love this whole idea of recovering from a vegetarian diet. I'd love to get taken through the process of that and hear a couple success stories.
Yes, it is a challenge for many of these people. And I would never say soy is their only problem because in many cases when people start eating a lot of soy, it's because they're concerned about their health to begin with. So there's usually not only the problems that may have been caused by soy, but whatever problems were in place ahead of that time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's often quite complicated, and I wish I could say there are quick fixes, but generally it does take a while. And I do some laboratory testing. I try to keep it fairly simple. I do a 24-hour urine test that has to do with people's digestive capacity, because I can put people on the best real foods in the world, but if they can't digest them and assimilate them and utilize them in the body, we need to give them some extra help there.
Mm-hmm.
And I work with the hair test because one of the huge problems with everyone today, and particularly with people who've been on soy for a long time or vegetarian diets, I'm talking about vegetarian diets that do not include raw dairy products, which can work out if you want to be a vegetarian. But most vegetarians are not doing raw dairy, and so they end up with a lot of deficiencies. So what I do find with these people is, in part because they cannot detoxify as well as we would like, they often have a whole lot of toxic metals, things like mercury, aluminum, lead, cadmium, etc. And
now,
can
I ask you two questions there? One sec. Number one, they can't detoxify as well because they've got such poor nutrient status?
Yes, they tend to be extremely deficient in cysteine, and that is one of their big problems, cysteine and taurine. They need those desperately, and they haven't been detoxifying well for quite a while in most cases.
And people need to understand that, because somewhere we've gotten this rap that soy is this great, complete protein, gives you everything you need, which is not the case there. So, and then the other side of it is, in the way soy is processed, isn't there, I've heard that you get aluminum out of the casks. Is that the case, or have I got that wrong?
That may be part of the problem. Many manufacturers are using stainless fats. That might be creating other problems like nickel toxicity problems. But everybody is exposed to that kind of things these days, unless we're completely getting foods directly from the farm or from our own gardens.
Okay, so it's more a matter of nutrient deficiencies because of the incomplete protein and the poor digestive effects of soy that are causing detox. So I'm going to go, I'll be quiet again and let you keep rolling. I just wanted to find out why.
Okay. Well, the interesting thing is soy actually contains a lot of cysteine, according to USDA tables. But here's the catch. It's all tied up in something called trypsin inhibitors, which makes it hard to digest the protein, and basically the cysteine comes out the body, you know, goes in and goes out, that the people don't benefit from it.
I didn't know that. That is so interesting. That's amazing.
Well, that is actually the reasons why many of the rats in some of these early studies would eat their own poop, and the reason is because that way they could get a usable cysteine out of what had been in their food.
Huh. Wow. Okay, so now what do you do, Pat? So kind of take me back. You were talking about detoxification with the client. Then what do you do?
So I test them. Of course, I do an extensive interview having to do with their diet, their lifestyle, their symptoms, family concerns, et cetera. I make dietary suggestions, and I am a big believer in real food, whole food, and slow food, stuff we prepare ourselves, stuff that doesn't come in packages. And in terms of what we often see with thyroid problems, I love to recommend coconut oil because it nourishes the thyroid and it also supports the immune system. So for a whole lot of people, that is something I'm going to be recommending to them.
That is great. I'm on Twitter, and I'm going to tweet that right now. we recommend a lot of coconut oil. I like it for weight loss and immune system, and I didn't know what it did to the thyroid, so that's exciting stuff.
It's a wonderful oil, and it's also really good because if somebody insists on staying a vegan despite my advice, that gives them a good quality saturated fat that they will eat, and they do need that desperately.
So if someone does insist on being a vegetarian or a vegan, what are some, because I still have some of those people, and we have those people for spiritual reasons, you can't touch that. Are there maybe three top things that you can give them to help them be at least in better health than they, you know, would have been?
Absolutely. I would send them to realmilk.com, and I would get them on real milk, which is raw milk. It's the way Mother Nature provided milk for us. And many people who do not tolerate supermarket milk will do just fine on raw milk, and it is so delicious. And California has been a good state to get raw milk, and the accessibility to it has been improving in many, many states, and I've been very involved in doing that. But realmilk.com is the place to go for information about availability and about safety issues. And when people have been traditionally vegetarians in India, that's the kind of vegetarians they were, and you can be healthy with that. But it needs to be raw milk. All this ultra-pasteurized pseudo-organic milk that we find in places like Whole Foods, that will not do the trick.
Okay, and it's realmilk.com, is that what you said?
Realmilk.com.
Now, I know we're going off of soy, but I have a question for you. If you've got someone who is showing sensitivities to dairy, would they be able to handle raw milk?
I would suggest that they give it a try because so many people thrive on that. But in some cases, it still doesn't work, and then it's more challenging. Then we need to do things like, I like a coconut tonic, which I've got the recipe for that on my website, soyfreesolutions.com.
Soyfreesolutions. Let's say it again. I want to make sure everyone gets it. I'm gonna tweet it. Soyfreesolutions.com. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you say? And what was the recipe that you had on there?
It's a recipe for coconut tonic, and it involves coconut milk plus some things added to that to give it the same nutritional profile as milk, but of course without the milk. And I think that is much, much better than any of these milk alternatives like rice milk or almond milk, which are very high in sugar and nutritionally deficient and not much good for us.
Awesome. I love that. Okay. I'm going to promote that in the e-zine too here. I'm just taking notes and I'm tweeting as we go. So hopefully you'll get some people bombing over to your site to get this stuff because this has to get out there. And I love that because so many people come in doing soy milk, then they switch to almond or rice milk, which to me is just a sugar blast. I don't see, there's nothing nutritional there going on. So I love this option. So do you have a success story, someone in particular you want to share that a turnaround here?
There's a lot of cases of somebody who started becoming health conscious. They blew out their thyroid. They started having libido problems and reproductive problems and all sorts of things. And we got them turned around. Of course, they eliminated soy, and they started going on real foods and whole foods and slow foods. And something I do recommend is actually a pretty high-fat diet, including good fats like butter and coconut oil, and not being afraid of the fats in animal meat. Lots of eggs, and if it's a woman who'd been trying to get pregnant, they often get pregnant so fast. I'm usually advising them to get really, really healthy and to take a year doing it, and they never take seriously my warnings that they could get pregnant really quickly, and boom, it often happens.
So cool. That is awesome. So any last words, and I want to make sure everyone gets that it's The Whole Soy Story by Dr. Kayla Daniels, two A's in Kayla. You can get it on Amazon. Give me the name of the website again so we make sure everyone has that.
Soyfreesolutions.com.
Okay, and any last parting thoughts that you would like to make sure that if I didn't ask you, they got out?
Soy is being very heavily recommended by the soy industry right now for weight loss, and it's being pitched as the solution to obesity in our kids. And that is just not the case, but so many people in the industry are working to get more and more soy in children's diets, and we need to save our children.
Yes, we do. So I'm right there with you. And again, you know, I've been walking in the store and educating the moms, which is, you know, borderline obnoxious. But if we don't do something, our whole society is going to go down. So
this is
thank you.
It's so much a grassroots effort. We all have to do it.
And I know we're over at NAMP, and that's the National Association of Nutrition Professionals. We are big fans of you as well. So we'll be doing our part, too, and we should probably have you in one of our e-zines as well coming up. So I want to thank you so, so much, and we'd love to have an article for the e-zine. I'll shoot you an email on that. And you've given us great information. And everybody listening, you got to have the book. It's a must for your library. And you need to have a second one, because if you start to see someone going the soy health food route, save their life and give them the whole soy story. Thanks again, Kayla.
Thank you.